you pursuing a natural lifestyle for yourself and your family? Are you concerned about the standard American diet and options available for healthcare? Are you curious about herbs for health or already practice home herbalism? You've come to the right place. My mom, Naomi Kilbrick, is a Christian clinical herbalist and owner of Laura Chi Wellness. She teaches simple ways to live in a more healthy way and to work with plants to promote and restore health. Welcome to the Family Herbalism Podcast.
Welcome back to the Family Herbalism Podcast. Before I jump into today's episode, I just want to hit pause for a second and acknowledge the fact that it is because of you listening here that this podcast is even still running. I heard recently from a couple of clients that I work with about the impact of some recent episodes, and they just were naming off these specific episodes that I had created and the facts that they had remembered from them and how they had applied them to their lives. And I just thought, you know, that's why this podcast is here. That's why I spend several hours a week putting this together, because I know that it is helping real individuals to improve their health and their lives. And when I hear back from a lot of you through email or through text messages or through one-on-one appointments that I happen to be doing with you, and I get to hear these stories of how specific episodes are really blessing you, that means a lot to me. And I just want to say thank you for doing that. Thank you for sharing your experiences. Thank you for telling me how important this is to you, because in weeks like the past few weeks have been, that information is actually really helpful. The last few weeks have been a challenge with my hand very slowly improving. I'm finally seeing some tissue regrowth, but it has been a difficult process with organizing my thoughts and typing things up. And everything I do in my life right now has been particularly slow. And so it's been a bit discouraging trying to create episodes in a timely way that are still going to be helpful to you. And it is messages like that that really help me to keep going and know that it's worth it. And it's okay if it's a little behind according to my own perfectionist schedule, but if it's there, it's a good thing. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being flexible. Thank you for sharing how it is supporting you. And now we can move on and actually start this episode. So I want to also thank a specific person who requested the topic for today. I received a letter through my website from a person who referred to themselves with the initials KK, and they said they would like to have more information on parasites and what that looks like in the human body and how to address it in a natural way. And so thank you, KK, for offering this suggestion, and I hope that you are blessed by the information that I share here today. Before we jump into the material, I also want to give you a quick heads up that the beginning tongue assessment class, which I normally provide through a live webinar, is now available as an evergreen program on my website. This means you can register at any time and have access to this one-hour class, along with the slides and the audio version. And I also have it set up so that you can complete a related challenge and participate in conversation about the content of the class with other students. And all of this is run through my new computer system, Practice Better, but you can sign up for it through the website by going to laureltreewellnessllc.com and clicking the tab labeled Classes. I'll have some more classes up fairly soon, I hope. I have some in the works, and we will see how it all comes together in the coming weeks and months. So today's topic, as promised, is parasites and what we can use for natural resources to eliminate them. But I think it's important first to address what parasites are, because there are a lot of assumptions and ideas that we can attach to the concept of parasites, and many of them do not accurately reflect what is happening in a parasite infection. So what do you think of when I say the word parasites? Do you think about drinking dirty water or working on a farm or maybe mission work in a third world country? Any of these are opportunities for parasite infections, but what about eating vegetables, getting a bug bite, petting your cat, swimming in a pond, or eating sushi with raw fish? These and other common first world scenarios are also opportunities to contract a parasite. I heard a podcast some time back where the guest was asked about the frequency of parasite infections, to which he asked the host if she could lay her hand on her chest and feel her heart beating. And of course she could, so he replied, "Then you have parasites." Perhaps more conservatively, an article published in Biomedical Research in 2021 reported that 3.5 billion people are affected worldwide each year, and in the one study referenced involving food workers, nearly half of those studied were found to have at least one parasitic infection. The question is, did they find all of the parasites present? Regardless, we know that parasites do not selectively choose their environments by country. They will live wherever they can. An older study published in the Journal of Neglected Tropical Diseases in 2014 reported that at least 12 million Americans were affected by new or chronic parasitic infections that year. They claimed that a large number of them were due to conditions related to poverty, but it's also apparent that a huge number of infections are actually due to lack of awareness of the problem, whether they had access to resources or not. Those infected may not, for example, have symptoms as serious or as obvious as those that we associate with parasites, like severe diarrhea or a chronic fever, and therefore may never know that the symptoms they do have are related. I'll share what some of these other symptoms can look like in a bit. But it's also important to know that parasites are actually a broad umbrella term that cover anything that depends on a host for protection, a food source, a place to reproduce, and generally the proper environment for its survival. Parasites can include a variety of worms, yeasts or fungi, and even bacteria. If the number of the parasites living in a person are small enough, and if the environment of the body is strong enough, a person may never know they have parasites living off them, nor have symptoms related to parasites. And so they can go on their merry way and never be sick, and that's okay. But if the number reaches a tipping point, or if the body is weakened by any number of things, they may then begin to feel sick. And this is why the actual number of infected individuals is probably much higher than reflected by available studies. Symptoms that may be experienced are quite varied and extensive, but include things like anal and nose itching, rashes on arms or webs of fingers, cheek acne or red cheeks, craving sugar, having to constantly clear the throat, chronic bloating or bloating after eating, intermittent IBS, diarrhea, chronic yeast infections, weight gain, back and shoulder or joint pain, fatigue, weak bones, palpitations, clogged ears, eye floaters, swelling around eyes, chronic or recurrent sinus infections, swollen and bleeding gums, frequent cavities, discolored or cracked teeth, and having anger, mania, or insomnia issues. What's fascinating is that for many people with symptomatic parasite infections, these problems will become more apparent in a cyclical fashion. Specifically, they will often be more noticeable around the full moon. And I know that sounds like science fiction, but in fact, some of these symptoms do occur around the full moon, and they can be accidentally blamed on PMS because that's a more familiar cycle that also can happen based on the moon cycle. But in fact, this isn't related to reproductive hormones. The reason the moon seems to be implicated is because during the full moon, we produce less melatonin and more serotonin. Melatonin, in addition to helping us sleep at night, is also a detox hormone. That's one of the reasons why we detox more at night than during the day. So during this time of the month, it's harder for our immune system to stay on top of the parasite level. Not only that, but serotonin not only makes us feel good, but it's also used by many parasites to increase their own vitality. This is a recipe for disaster for those with chronic infections, and it's also why farmers deworm their animals around the full moon when parasites are more exposed. That's a tradition that has been going on since history has been recorded. It's a tradition that's been passed down from farmer to farmer for a long time. Let's stop for a moment and make this point very clear. Having symptoms like those I just mentioned does not necessarily mean that you have parasites. For example, craving sugar can be a sign of a simple protein deficiency, and indigestion can be caused by liver and gallbladder congestion. Some of these symptoms can be caused by injury, others by allergies, and some by chemical exposure. So any one of these by itself, or maybe even a few of these, could be explained by other situations, other causes. But if you have a number of these symptoms and they're unexplained by obvious causes, and they're not improving with other methods of treatment, that point is particularly clear. You may want to consider parasites as a possibility. If you have leaky gut, celiac disease, Crohn's disease, or diverticulitis, you are at a higher risk for a parasite infection because your weakened digestive tract provides an environment more conducive to making a home for them. So if you are in one of these categories, if you have one of these diagnoses, it may be particularly important for you to work on restoring your gut health to prevent a possible parasite infection in the future. SIBO and SIFO, or small intestinal bacterial or fungal overgrowth, are two examples of parasitic type infections that have gotten out of hand, where bacteria or fungi that are normally kept in check in the large intestine have started extending their territory to include the small intestine or even the stomach as well. Another feature of some chronic parasite infections is biofilm. This is a sticky substance made mostly of extracellular fluid and fat that parasites will cover themselves in to hide from the immune system. As the white blood cells are floating past in the bloodstream, all they see are lipids and they just keep on going. This allows the parasites protection as they continue to reproduce and use the body's resources. It also makes testing for parasites difficult, and it's why Lyme tests often come back negative when they shouldn't. And it makes antibiotics and other medications less effective, so that after the danger has passed, the parasites can come out of hiding and continue their work. That said, many herbal antibacterials are able to break down biofilm, and I'll mention a few of these shortly. For this reason, if you're treating an infection and it seems to keep coming back, consider biofilms as an explanation. Before I get into testing and treatment, I also want to speak to the fact that metal toxicity can be a factor that needs to be addressed alongside parasitic infections. Some parasites encyst themselves in biofilm or coat themselves in that material, and others coat themselves in available heavy metals for protection. So while some metals are important for us in small amounts like zinc, iron, and magnesium, parasites can become magnets for metals that should not be in our systems. And because some metals are actually neurotoxins, this can only compound the parasite problem. Doing a metal detox alongside a cleanse for persistent parasites can make the recovery more complete and long-lasting. I'll include a few suggestions for this today in case you're interested. Now, testing for parasites is widely available in the form of stool tests. You can request one from your doctor if you believe that you are experiencing an infection. And these will determine if you have intestinal parasites specifically. Some white blood cell markers on a complete blood count or CBC with differential, which is performed from a blood draw, can also point toward a parasite infection, although they're not conclusive. They just point you in the right direction. If you do suspect an infection, consider asking your doctor for testing to help you narrow down the possibilities and direct your treatment. If you do test positive, your doctor may offer you a medication that kills parasites. And if you choose to take this, it's very important that you let them know if you're pregnant, because some, including herbal anthelmintics, can induce a miscarriage. As always, there are herbal and other natural methods of detoxing or bringing parasite levels back into balance where the immune system can stay on top of them. I recommend beginning with the spring detox episode, number 23 of season 3, as I cover some important basics like how to know if you need to focus on rebuilding your body before actively detoxing, and the importance of keeping elimination pathways open, not just jumping into an intense herbal protocol, which could turn out very badly if you are quite infected. Once you've covered the basics, you will likely be curious about what herbs to focus on as part of your approach to eliminating any bacteria, yeast, worms, biofilms, and heavy metals that are impacting you. Let's break these down so you know why I'm bringing them up as options for your herbal approach. Now, there's a lot of overlap between herbs that have all three major actions we're looking for, which are anthelmintics, also known as vermifuge herbs for worms, antifungals, and antibacterials. At least three of the herbs that fall in all three categories are also strong biofilm busters, these being calendula, oregano, and ginger. But there is likely additional overlap that I'm not covering here. Other herbs that fall in these major categories include black walnut, juniper berry, barberry, garlic, thyme, and marigold. The common features are pungent, bitter, and resinous constituents, as well as berberine specifically. Other antifungals you may want to consider are aloe and prickly ash, which are also anthelmintic. Antibacterials you may also want to consider include mugwort and other Artemisia family plants, as well as plantain and hibiscus. All three of these are also anthelmintic. Other antibacterials include yarrow, Japanese knotweed, and cat's claw. Additional anthelmintics that reduce worms specifically include queen anne's lace, catnip, senna, forsythia, cayenne, nettle, valerian, horehound, motherwort, peppermint, sage, and peach. Monolaurin, which is found in coconut oil, kills worms as well, and pumpkin seeds can paralyze them, so these can be snacked on while working with anthelmintics and digestive herbs to flush them out. Additional biofilm busters you may want to consider include clove, eucalyptus, rosemary, cinnamon, and turmeric. And we haven't talked about adsorbent herbs for heavy metals, but I suggest looking into activated charcoal, chlorella, cilantro, chickweed, and lavender. I'm going to avoid going into heavy metals too much in this conversation because that really deserves an episode all to itself. Now, there are other herbal actions that may be helpful in supporting elimination, including carminatives, cholagogues, and mild laxatives, although many of the herbs that offer actions specific to the detox you're doing, like queen anne's lace for worms, also have these features. So look at all the plant's actions when you're choosing them to really maximize your blend. Now, what should you do with these herbs? You can either prepare or work with a single herb in a tea or tincture form, or powder the herb and add it to your food. I prefer working with a blend in tea form for parasites suspected to be in the digestive tract, urinary tract, or reproductive areas, such as worms in the gut or vaginal yeast. And I prefer tincture form for parasites believed to be in the bloodstream, muscle tissue, or other deeper tissues. This is just a personal preference. You may find a different method works well for you. Herbs are best taken within a couple of days of the full moon, as we talked about earlier, and continued for at least a few days after. This can either be continued until the infection is believed to be cleared, or temporarily discontinued and then picked up again around the next full moon. But the protocol that you follow should be specific to you and your situation. One recipe I created for a client, which was confirmed to be effective, was made with 4 parts queen anne's lace, 2 parts thyme, 2 parts oregano, and 1 part ginger. When considering dosage, do keep in mind that slow and steady is generally better than large doses infrequently, And it's important to track symptoms to understand how an herb is impacting your body. This will help you know how long to continue treating yourself and whether you need to stop or switch herbs partway through. Now, many conversations about parasites revolve around what worms look like when you eliminate them. But looking for signs in the toilet as confirmation that you eliminated worms or other parasites is about as effective as relying on the bullseye rash as the primary indicator of Lyme disease. Most parasites are not actually visible to the human eye. So while seeing worms in the toilet may happen when you take anthelmintics, you may see nothing at all, and that's okay. So how do you know when your protocol is complete? How do you know when to stop? Usually, symptoms resolve pretty quickly when parasites are under control. If the cause of your symptoms is in fact worms or other parasites, and the chosen protocol is appropriate for you, you may begin to feel better within a few weeks or even days. Not always, though. Sometimes symptoms actually worsen before they improve, and sometimes biofilm needs to be broken up before they can be effectively eliminated. Again, carefully track your symptoms. If you see any change for the worse or better, you're probably on the right track, but your protocol may need to be adjusted to reflect the needs pointed out by your change in experience. Dealing with infections often requires increased awareness and the ability to adapt to what your body needs on a frequent basis. With the tea recipe I just mentioned, I often recommend that clients drink 2 to 4 cups a day, so up to a quart for a week or so, and then reevaluate. If you start a few days before the full moon, this will cover a good span of time when the parasites are more vulnerable. But if you develop concerning symptoms as a result of your treatment, seriously consider getting support to help you through this. It can really help to have an outside perspective. During a detox of parasites, it will also be really important to focus on a healthy diet with real food, exercise or at least regularly move your body, drink plenty of water, and consider taking pre and probiotics to rebalance your microbiome. Some people find that temporarily avoiding meat supports detox as well, and raising the stomach acid level by eating bitters and reducing intake of carbohydrate-rich foods will help to kill off parasites in the digestive system. Okay, so today's herb focus is Queen Anne's lace. Queen Anne's lace is known in Latin as Daucus carota, which is the wild carrot. So it's in the Apiaceae or parsley family. It's natural to Europe and North America and grows wild in meadows and along roadsides in the summer. It looks like a large carrot. The plant's about 3 or 4 feet tall at full height with feathery leaves and tiny composite flowers that are in the shape of an umbel or like an umbrella. The entire plant is edible and medicinal, with leaves and flowers picked at peak bloom, the green seeds picked when the flower dries up into a bowl shape that is often referred to as looking like a nest, and then the roots can be harvested afterwards, around the same time that root vegetables are picked in vegetable gardens. Now, it's hard to find the actual chemical constituents listed anywhere for Daucus carota, but the seeds are rich in lutolin, which is an antioxidant that is great for cardiovascular and joint health, and the roots have furanocoumarins, which are natural blood thinners, and which can promote temporary sensitivity to the sun for some people. Ironically, the oil in the seeds is actually protective to the skin and has some SPF value. While Queen Anne's lace is safe for most people, those with lupus or who are otherwise sensitive to the sun should use caution, and the seeds should not be consumed by those who are pregnant, which I'll explain shortly. And if you are wild harvesting this plant instead of purchasing it from a trusted herbalist, it's very important to correctly identify it, as the Apiaceae family contains both safe and deadly plants, and there are some common features. So please use an identification key or book when wild harvesting this plant for the first time. A few important things to look for include a hairy stem, leaf-like bracts underneath the flower head, and a red, purple, or black flower, which is in the center of most flower heads. Some of the key actions of this plant are pituitary stimulant, carminative, antibacterial, vulnerary, diuretic, antiseptic, blood mover, abortifacient, emmenagogue, aphrodisiac, stomachic, tonic, antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, galactagogue, anthelmintic, antilithic, laxative, and it has an affinity for the respiratory system, liver, kidneys, uterus, and cardiovascular system. It has a sweet, pungent, carrot-like or parsley-like taste that's generally warming and drying. Its medicinal qualities are best extracted in water, so infusions and decoctions are more effective than tinctures. Oils can be used to extract some properties from the seeds, especially its emollient ones. And you can also use all the parts in food. The seeds can be ground and added to food to support digestion. The flower heads can be battered and fried or made into a jelly. And the roots can be eaten like garden carrots, although you'll likely want to cook them down a little extra because they are more fibery. Finally, you must be curious about the specific indications for or uses of Queen Anne's lace. So because it is a pituitary stimulant, it's great for underactive pituitary gland function, which includes low levels of kidney, thyroid, and sex hormones. Infertility, low libido, irregular periods or painful periods, milk production, and large prostate, and it can prevent implantation of an embryo because it supports estrogen but not progesterone release. So if you're trying to conceive, take it up until ovulation to support your hormone regulation, but not afterwards. It is also helpful for cold, free-flowing, or stagnant fluids, so all states of cold damp, which would include constipation or diarrhea, diminished mental function as well. States of depletion is another situation that I commonly use Queen Anne's lace for, which often follows chronic illnesses like cancer or prolonged stressful experiences. Queen Anne's lace can also be helpful with any dysfunction of the urinary tract system, including UTIs, bladder inflammation, kidney stones, frequent urination, or deficient kidney function. In this case, you might see edema in the feet or water retention elsewhere, gout, back pain, arthritic pain, and hypertension. It can be helpful with respiratory symptoms like chronic coughing and shallow breathing, again, because it helps with that cold, stagnant fluid. It can help with low liver function, including signs like indigestion and either being too thin or being overweight because you're not metabolizing your food very well. Queen Anne's lace is also helpful for nervous system symptoms like tired muscles and fibromyalgia. And finally, it can help eliminate threadworms. Because it grows wild where I live and abundantly, it's one I like to have on hand for clients. Not only is it my parasite protocol, but I also often use it in cases where a client has underactive thyroid function and congested tissues. If you would like support creating a parasite blend for yourself or finding just the right herbs for your situation, reach out to me for an appointment by visiting www.laureltreewellnessllc.com or emailing me at laureltreewellness@gmail.com. And if you have a special interest in a topic you would like to hear me speak about, please send your ideas to me as well. Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this episode helpful, I would be grateful if you shared it with a friend. And don't forget to leave a review on your podcast app. Have a wonderful week. And if you don't hear from me before Thanksgiving, I hope you have a wonderful vacation, a wonderful gathering with your loved ones as well. Have a great week.
The Family Herbalism Podcast is created for educational purposes only. You are responsible for any and all medical and health decisions you choose to make. If you experience a medical emergency, please contact appropriate medical providers. To receive herbalist support, please visit www.laureltreewellnessllc.com. If you enjoy this podcast and find it helpful, please share it with your friends and family. Thank you for listening.